Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
Thank you, and thank you very much, Fabian, for that. So hello, everybody, and welcome again. And I'm very delighted to welcome our speaker today, which is Judita Ben-David. And Judita is a psychotherapist. She is also a lecturer, a supervisor, a trauma therapist, and a movement therapist. So Judita is joining us here today, and she is the co-founder of Psychodharma School. She is the initiator and director of the Humanitarian Toe Row Group, which does for mindfulness and which has done a lot of cross-cultural work in South Africa as well as Ireland. And of course, she is the founder and of Mindfulness in Arabic project. Now, this offers an 8-week online course. It's free and it's for Arabic speaking refugees, but it is also available in English. And this course provides practical tools and exercises to help those fleeing or facing violence or who have suffered trauma. And this website offers a lot of tools for therapists and social workers as well, and volunteers to help them cope with their stress, but they can also pass those tools on to their clients. So Judita, you have such extensive research, academia experience, and of course, practical experience. And I'm really excited to welcome you here today. So over to you.
Thank you, Rebecca. And thank you very much also for this amazing platform, the Embodiment Conference. It's a lovely and rich conference, and I'm hearing a lot of good words about it from many people that I know. Steve was actually one of my teachers a while ago, and it was nice to have him introduce his work. So, hello, everybody, and I'm really, really hoping, I'm saying an apologetic thing in the beginning. I hope that we're going to have good internet connection. We're having some kind of a wind and sandstorm around here, and it's very strong. So I found a corner in my house where it seems like good, but and I hope it will be. So if there's some kind of a disconnection, maybe just stay with patience and I will come up. So just to say a little bit, what I want to offer today is some info and some work in progress of our project of mindfulness in Arabic, which is bringing work from mindfulness from the years now, the mindfulness programs that were specifically more for settled people, for people that are not specifically in crisis, that came from a world before that, in the 70s and 80s, when it was thought to be that mindfulness and vipassana and other practices can be only for people that do not have depression or anxiety. And then in the 80s, it moved to a program that people can use and should use even with mild up to mild depression and anxiety. And now what we're trying to do is to adapt this to people that are in crisis or in times of crisis. And just like what Steve said, is like, what could be a better time for this? I mean, it's such a time with so much information and so much unknown and instability and upheaval and different difficult emotions that are coming up. So it could be a really good time to find what is the adaptation to specifically this time. And MIA, Mindfulness in Arabic, is a group, an international group that has joined voluntarily for this subject. And we have quite a few people that are from families and even their own personal history that were refugees. If it is along the years or along history, or it is actually in the here and now, Syrian and Iraqi refugees. So we're trying to think that out. And I'd like to begin maybe first with us sitting for a few minutes, if that's okay, to gather ourselves up before and resourcing ourselves before we go into this subject. And I would like also to offer at the end a meditation that can bring us into some kind of a feeling of one of the tools that we are using in this course. So maybe we can sit, and I will put this just a second. Okay. So let's just find ourselves a comfortable place. And see if we can feel our feet on the ground, maybe on a carpet or on a table or on earth. Just noticing the touch of our feet, sole of our feet on the ground. Maybe we can and maybe we can't. It's just fine. Just collecting information. The curious, gentle awareness. And slowly maybe feeling also the ankles, the calves, behind, front, the knees, thighs, the bottom, maybe how it touches the cushion, the chair, the sofa, whatever you are sitting on. Just notice if we can get some information from that point of contact. So maybe it's heavy or light, warm or cold. Maybe it's stable or unstable, and all of this is just fine. Whatever is there, that is what we are bringing. Our attention, our generous, curious, gentle attention. We might notice our belly or our back, whatever way, the front of the torso or the back of the torso, the sides of the torso, maybe the touch of the cloth, clothes on our body, maybe not. The shoulders, right and left. Tight, loose, maybe held a little bit up, or allow them to let go and feeling something trickling down from the shoulders, the arms on each side, elbows, hands, palms of the hands. Just noticing if there's some kind of a relief there, maybe, and again, maybe not. Maybe the energy, maybe coming up or going down, or just some energy that we can feel from the inside out. You might feel some kind of a present sensation, experience of being here now. Maybe noticing your face, your skull, the hair touching, not touching. Maybe we can bring the chin just a little tiny bit towards the chest. Our neck can straighten just a teeny bit. Our forehead, eyebrows, balls of the eyes in the liquid of the eyes, the cheeks, the nose. And maybe there's even a sigh coming out. And we'll just follow that sigh. And then maybe follow a breath of air coming in and going out. Maybe touching the nose or the lips. Maybe the tongue is relaxing itself. Leaving plans and expectations, or maybe bringing them to remember what we want to ask here in this group. Whatever you like, whatever your experience and practice is. See if we can just put one hand on the belly and see if the belly is coming out and going in. Touch the belly a little bit underneath the little thingy that we have there. Just the bottom, the half bottom of our belly. And maybe taking a big breath in, letting go of a breath as long as you can. Coming back, opening your eyes slowly, maybe allowing your feet and your hands to move a little bit. And I will put my glasses on to see you guys. Yeah, and I think that, great, we could start if we're all here. So let me share a screen. Some of you that are here have seen some of this. So it will be sort of like just a beginning, and then we can move to other things. So what I'm sharing here is a presentation that will take us into the Mindfulness in Arabic presentation. And this is about what are the adaptations. So we'll see in a minute, but these are a few things that I will talk about a little bit, like after I show something about the mindfulness in Arabic project. So let me go. And as also has been said, if there are any questions, you could put the questions in the chat, and then Rebecca can help me out with answering them. So this is the Mindfulness Arab in Arabic project, and this is our website. As you can see, there's up here, there are links that you can look into in the media. There are some webinars or pieces of interviews. In the resources, there are articles that can help anybody that's interested in this subject. We have a course here, and the course is in Arabic, but there's also a place there that you can get the material in English as well. So that's what Rebecca also offered, is that it is for the refugees themselves, but it's also for counselors and therapists and humanitarian aid workers that are working with the counselors. And we've been trying this out in Turkey and Greece and in field, and now we're in the Galilee as well, and now we're doing it over the net. This was decided upon even before the COVID-19 era, and I'm really happy about that because there's material there that can be used. So this is a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. The true miracle is not walking on water, but simply walking on this earth. Present moment, blue sky, curious eyes, truly alive. And that is really what we're aiming towards, the walking on the earth. And that's also what we thought was very strong about the refugee wave that came in from Syria, from Iraq before, and now also from Africa. And this is actually part of our history as human beings, how we walked the earth. I want to say one thing before I move forward, is that we come to this project as a cultural sensitive group, knowing that when you translate methods or practices or even books sometimes to another language and another culture, it is important to be very sensitive to the culture that you're dealing with. And sometimes it's not only about being polite or kind, but it's actually about metaphors. It's actually about the material itself, how that material is translated in such a way that it will be accepted on the other side as something as precise as possible. And there are a few things that I will speak about this later on. This is a map of where a few months ago our project already has arrived. And this is very exciting for us. It has arrived in many places where there are refugees, many places where there are humanitarian aid workers, but also to some of the places where there is violence and crisis right now. So you can see there's also a lot of interest in the Middle East and in the Emirates, in Saudi Arabia, in India. It went all the way to Canada and the United States, where a lot of the refugees have arrived, and of course Europe. So, and this is more about where it has arrived, even Lebanon, which was very touching for us, because it is the neighbor of Israel and Palestine. So this is the beginning, where you fall into this, when you open the course, or where you arrive rather than fall into. This is the 8-week course. And when you, you can see these are steps. And here, when we enter into the first week, we can see that there are documents to read. There are media audio to listen to. And we chose the audio very specifically, not video. First of all, because for refugees, usually they're using their phones, they're using their cellular appliances, and they usually do not have enough capacity to watch videos, not for long. And we have heard also for humanitarian aid workers that were working with refugees that when they offered them videos, usually they did not use them. But when we offered audios to the people in Turkey that we taught, it was helpful. So this is where our project is. These are some pictures from the refugee walk, and this picture on the right are part of the group that we have worked with. So challenges in adopting mindfulness for our refugees. The research has shown that effectiveness of mindfulness courses have been shown quite extensively, actually, about improving well-being and reducing symptoms of PTSD. There has been research with veterans and PTSD symptoms, and there's some research also with women with sexual trauma and PTSD symptoms. However, what has also been understood is that without proper attention to the symptoms of trauma, mindfulness can exacerbate trauma-related problems. And that was a question that has been has risen in the mindfulness community and in the mindfulness teachers community. And in this project, as well as other people that are nowadays working with this, such as David Trelevin, which you probably know or heard of, and I know he has been presenting here on the Embodiment Conference as well. And we've done a webinar with him, and you can find it also on our website. So he has gone into the question about how do we create trauma-sensitive mindfulness. And there are other people that are doing research, even in the Haifa University in Israel. So what were the hurdles that Mia had and or was sort of like thinking about? That we need to adapt mindfulness to refugees' language and culture, which is what I was noting before. Adapting mindfulness to crisis areas and unstable communities, which means that, you know, you can't be really sure that somebody's going to come to your course every week at the same time. That we'll be able to go forward with all of the practices and taking time to sit between 20 minutes to 1 hour every day. And has a lot more, tackles that are coming to. And of course, adapting mindfulness to population, holding traumatic imprints and speaking physical ailments. So these are two things. Traumatic imprints sometimes can be very persistent, and we need to know how to attend to them. Of course, how to bring compassion, but also how to bring clear seeing. And the mindfulness teacher, facilitator, humanitarian aid worker needs to know more about what trauma brings in the behavior of a person, in their ability to sit with things, in the amount of time that they can sit with the mindfulness practice. Also things about anchors, etc. And also when they speak physical ailments, because a lot of times in the West, bringing mindfulness was brought a lot about relating to your thought patterns, relating to your emotions. And we're coming back here actually to give a lot more emphasis on sensations and going back actually to the first foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of sensations. And why is that? It's first of all, it's because I do come from somatic experiencing training and a body-oriented psychotherapy training many, many years. So probably I have a bias towards that as well. But that has also been what has helped me in my coming out of trauma in my life. And also what I can see with refugees coming from the East, especially from Syria, Middle East, Syria and Iraq and Palestine, is that they know how to speak of physical ailments. They come a lot of times with physical symptoms. In the West, a lot of times people will come to therapy or to a mindfulness group and a lot of times speak maybe about emotions or about reoccurring thoughts. But here people, refugees coming from these areas, actually the first thing that they will bring will be a lot about their body. So it felt like this is a great portal. And of course, least but, you know, not unimportant at all is that, last but not least, actually, yeah, that's how we say it in English, is that sensations are the portal to the here and now. And when we are going through times of crisis and when we are in such instability, one of the best things to back to is the here and now. Of course, in small chunks, and we'll speak about that. So here we are. Trauma-informed sensitive mindfulness. So of course, part of this coming up and that we are talking about it exposing it more is the rise in scientific understanding of trauma. A lot because of a lot of brain research and of course also Bessel van der Kolk and his friends such as Peter Levy and Pat Ogden. Nowadays also Daniel Siegel and other people. Richard Schwartz in the past also have brought a lot of understanding of trauma from the body-oriented methods and connecting to the brain and research. And then a lot of understanding has suddenly become very clear. And of course, research that has shown, such as the ACE research, such as United Nations have also created research on the prevalence of trauma in society across languages, across cultures, West and East, North and South. So also there have been many triggers in the society. As I said, veterans, the Me Too movement, now the Black Life Matters movement, waves of refugees, survival, intimidation, displacement, loss, instability. And then the COVID-19 outburst and the anxiety from that and the fear, the violence, the fear that we see in the people that are handling the situation, the fear that we are experiencing as some kind of a disbelief in how the handling is happening. And then of course, also oppression and social justice issues that are coming up underneath this and with this outburst. And on the other side also, the soaring popularity of mindfulness. So there are a lot more mindfulness groups and mindfulness courses offered. People that in the past would have not gone to this, I would have thought of this maybe as some kind of metaphysic or a new age stuff. Actually, it's moving into the very mainstream channels, mindfulness in the workplace, mindfulness for leadership, many other courses that are bringing a lot more people and vast array of people to the mindfulness courses, a vast array of behaviors, a vast area, vastness of diagnoses, if we want to say, or you know, difficulties. So in any mindfulness group, we believe there is at least one person that has been affected by trauma. So let's go forward and talk a little bit about the steps of adaptations. What we're talking about is how can we go slow? Why do we need to go slow? Because there's so much fast movement around. There's just so much information coming. And as we know also, let alone the mindfulness process in itself, which is, you know, a process that is bringing you to the here and now and wants you also to, you know, see if you can meet each movement as it arrives, as it stays, and as it goes. But also from the trauma process that we know, it's like, remember the hand of Daniel Siegel, the brain in the hand, is that there's like trauma, and Peter saying how trauma is too much information, too fast, too soon, and then what happens is a lot of dissociations, right? A lot of, you know, all of this coming out at once, this tsunami of information, and then the, you know, brain saying, I'm out of here, you know? And then the limbic part saying, I'm out of here. And then we're staying with the hind brain. So this is something that if there are people that do not know what I'm speaking about, I'm not going to be speaking about it right now, but you can always check Daniel Siegel, Brain in the Hand. And you can also check Peter Levine's definition of trauma and his great book. If you have questions about that, of course, you can also come to my courses or to supervision groups. But let's go back, okay? So from that, we understand that what we do need to do is we need to go slow. And we need to see how we can tease people to come out of that, which is, you know, what we call the trauma vortex, or really just real crisis. You know, we don't need even to call it trauma, but it's like being in crisis is like that a lot of times. It's either we're into too much information, we don't know what to do, and we're unconfident, and we can't decide, and we're going right, and then we're going left, or we're numbing out. I'll show this in a minute. What I'm talking about is the window of tolerance and how we go out of the window of tolerance. So in order to come back, we want to go slow. In order to come back to the senses, we want to go slow. Our vagus nerve, which is the nerve that dorsal vagal, that brings up the information, brings up sensations from the body so that we will be able to get acquainted with them, works sometimes 7 times slower than our, you know, cognitive movement and wirings. So we need to go slow, but not too slow. Why not too slow? Because when we come to meet somebody, even if we would like to take him out from where he is, we need to find a way to touch base with her or him. And that effect of teasing, you know, is really important. So you want to meet it, and you want to bring the atmosphere and the invitation to go slow, but you don't want to go too slow so you will not meet the person, or too slow that you will lose the person as well. And the other effects of, you know, crisis and trauma will come up. And one of the ways to do this in the beginning is grounding, resourcing, and, you know, helping the curious attention to arise. Well, these are things that we are cultivating during the course, but this is something, these things are the very basic things that we provide immediately. Grounding, resourcing, and curious attention. Grounding is a little bit of what we did in the beginning here with this meditation. There are other ways of grounding as well. Some of you may know. And we can also touch base with whatever is around us, or find something that is comfortable, that when we put our eyes on can bring some kind of a feeling of safety, or at least, you know, comfort. these are things that we will do when we're bringing grounding, resourcing, and curious attention. Then what we do also is we add choice for self-regulation. Why choice? Usually in crisis and in trauma, the sense was there was no choice. The sense was of helplessness, or at least something that, you know, put us in some kind of a freeze response, or that we were, you know, confused and could not decide. And so we want to bring that into our course and into the meditation. So you will see in the course that there is a lot of choice. There's also education on choice as well, but also education as in a way to bring the people to a joint venture. So we are collaborating with the students. We're not just teaching and, you know, thinking that what we know is the best way, but we're collaborating and asking questions and wanting, you know, them to join as partners into an inquiry. So that also is attending to the choice. And there's also graduate education on interoception. Interoception as language of sensations and awareness of the language of sensations. For whoever is interested in the brain, the insula is involved in that as well. But I would like to speak more here about the interoception process as something that is very much vital for resiliency. And we'll get to that in a minute. Other thing that component is returning to the window of tolerance, specifically as is written here in titration, small chunks coming back into the window of tolerance, small chunks of activation, whether it's from below or above the window of tolerance, and in such a way to, of course, also bring back the sense of mastery and the sense of I am here, but also in order to flex and widen the window. So I think that these things are actually very basic to mindfulness. If we have been sitting and practicing, the you know, bringing back of attention, that muscle that, you know, we cultivate, bringing back of attention, that muscle is also something that we are using here in returning to the window of tolerance. And of course, flexible anchors. I don't know if all of you know what the word anchors means, or anchor, but it's that which we put our attention on, that which we can hold maybe as a rhapsody, that can bring us time and again to the here and now. In mindfulness, in the classic way of mindfulness, the breath was used as an anchor. So we would practice how to stay with the breath. It was an amazing tool. It still is an amazing tool. It's a dynamic tool. There are many changes as well in this tool, in the breath, you know. And we're learning how to stay with something that's changing in the midst of all of this. And yet that itself becomes a place of somewhat relative stability. And to that, we bring our attention. But when we work with refugees and when we work with people in crisis, people that have gone through violence, people that have gone through loss and great fear, have, you know, frozen or have some kind of a freeze in their behavior, in their body, in their nervous system. Sometimes the breath is not exactly the first thing that we will work with as an anchor. It might have too much dynamic for now, as well as it might be the crux of the matter sometimes. It might hold that fear, that contraction very strongly. And when we, you know, bring some tension there, re-traumatization might happen. So what we're offering are some other anchors. Not that we're leading the breath, because the breath is precious in a way. And coming back to the breath and finding that stream of the breath and being able to be with it in a healthy way and can bring great capability in working with difficult emotions and with difficult situations, for sure. But in the first steps, we might use different anchors to practice also that element, first of all, of the gentle, curious awareness, that element of compassion, the element of being able to stay with, and of course, coming back to. And then we can try out places that might hold a lot more activation or fear or resistance. So anchor-like, such as points of contact, like we did in the beginning, or anchors like we can start with sound, you know, sound that is not connected right now to the body itself. We can start also from a practice with the hand, and or with resources, just like with what somatic experiencing has brought to our work. Just, you know, finding a resource and deepen it and staying with and bringing more curious attention to it and going away, or something will take our attention away, and how do we come back? So that those could be some of the anchors, and there are more. This is the window of tolerance. Some of you probably know this, just to understand that this sort of like when it comes out of the window of tolerance, where what we call also the river of life, it is an activation. So some things that in the past were called difficult emotions, and mindfulness was dealing with them, in the beginning, we will not go there. We'll start from different qualities. And if something like, you know, hypervigilance or a feeling of overwhelm will come, we'll try to stop, pause, take a small chunk, and see how we can titrate it back into the window of tolerance. That is something from the area of trauma. And it's a sort of like combined and interacting and being put into the design of trauma-sensitive mindfulness. I'll take questions in a while. I just want to go through the interception here. So as I said, in order to support the refugee community in shedding off the acute trauma imprints, we want to aid them in coming back to the senses and the sense of the internal parts of the body. So we'll go from the periphery, we'll come from sounds or points of contact, you know, we'll resources, but then we'll slowly come into the sense of the internal parts of the body. We might move through the boundaries of the body first. But why do we want to go into the sense of the internal parts of the body? Mainly because these sensations are part of the interoceptive process. And the interoceptive process is the process that is in charge of the homeostasis. That, as we know, in crisis and trauma and this modern, you know, life of the last few months, homeostasis has been felt rather chaotic. And coming back with our awareness, touching into that process, could be actually very beneficial. It has been shown in research that safe nervous system processes and body cues may facilitate constructive interactions with the relational world to support change and growth, which means that in a surprising way, for the body-oriented psychotherapist, it wasn't surprising, but for the brain research community, it was surprising to see that actually body cues and coming back to the sense of the internal parts and bringing the nervous system to a place that is a little bit more settled can actually affect your relational world, which means that in turn, we can support the refugees and, of course, the humanitarian aid workers that sometimes do get touched by vicarious trauma from people that they work with. We can support them in resettling. We can support them in lowering their vigilance and in empathetic communication. And that is really one of the visions, you know, the dreams, the longings behind the mindfulness in Arabic process and trauma-sensitive mindfulness is that we're doing here something that can actually also help with the communication between different communities. When a refugee comes in to a community, there is a lot of animosity, especially now because of the fear that is there, not only from the refugees themselves. Animosity can come up, different culture, you know, different language, different clothes. We want to bring better communication for all involved. And we believe that when we come back to our senses and when interception is being cultivated and that ability to be aware of that and to the deep listening, this can happen. So the other thing is that interoception sensations, let me just go back a minute. I can't right now. Okay, anyway, interoception is also tied into the immune system. And probably some of you know that trauma and trauma imprints, traumatic process is tied into the immune system. And when we have a strong immune system and a healthy immune system, that can help us out with dealing with the process and teasing it apart. And that would have helped also in the way this organism was affected by the outside environment. So resilience is largely about body awareness and not rational thinking. I will stop here, I think. And Rebecca, if there are any questions.
Juditha, thank you so much. It's been really, really interesting so far. We have about 11 minutes left. So if anybody has any questions, please pop them in the Q&A box. Oh, we have one coming in here now. Okay, so trauma brings about thoughts like one is blaming themselves for what's happened, and they might believe they don't deserve to get better or to undertake even a course in mindfulness. So how do you work with that?
Yeah, trauma does feel sometimes just like a curse that is, you know, very, very troublesome and that cannot be solved. I truly understand that and have been dealing with that as well in the past. But I think that a lot of times when you went through something personally, it can be easier to bring it across. And still, I think that we educate, and I educate people in the therapy sessions, but also over the mindfulness in Arabic platform, about ways that trauma actually can be dealt with, and that doesn't have to be a curse. And I think that a lot of the brain research lately has been showing that. And when you bring, you know, you educate people and you show them things in the ways that they can be understood, I think that there is some partnership that comes through. And of course, when you practice something and it works, then even if it just brought a little teeny bit of benefit, then you come back for more.
Sorry, thank you, Juditha. There was one thing that I was thinking as well, as you find it hard to say recruit people for the course with among the refugees, like, is there a challenge there in getting them to take up the course?
Well, you know, the interesting thing right now is that Mindfulness in Arabic is an online platform. And there have been something like, first of all, over 1,500 entries into our website. And then over 600 people already that went into the first week, where they have three meditations and a few documents. So I cannot say that we had problem right now in getting people to come in or to join. We might notice later on where people will stop, and that is something that we are going to filter out, and we want to take the analytics for that. And we do believe that there needs to be some kind of interactive component to it, where people can send questions and answers, so that we can feel, you know, where there is a difficulty. But actually, there's a lot of curiosity about mindfulness right now in the world. And that's not something that I feel is difficult, nor have I felt that in Turkey when I was working there.
Okay, that's good to hear. I think you're right. There is a lot of curiosity around it. It's becoming much more popular, let's say. And the other thing that struck me was, I thought you had really interesting points about how the breath can be activating for some people, and how people may need other anchors. But also I liked what you said about around choice, because, you know, teaching people to self-regulate, like allowing themselves time to breathe or take time out or whatever, is giving them the choice, I thought was really, really poignant there. But the other question I was just thinking of, I know you've done research in this area as well, but what are the effects of the online training? What have people noticed having gone through the 8 weeks?
Okay. Well, if it's okay, I'll go into some of the, let me just share, because we have something very interesting here. Let me see where it is. Okay, so some words from participants. We Arabs have suffered much violence and trauma, and suffer still. Mindfulness helps us shine a softer light on traumatic experiences that threaten to take over and rule our life. I used the guided meditation with my group today. This is from a woman from Cyprus that has been using it with women refugees. That are coming from the Middle East. I used the guided meditation with my group today, and it really moved them. The smiles and sense of aliveness I saw in their eyes when they came back from their internal space was beautiful for me and for them to experience. So, and this is a group that they have been together for 6 months, and it really excited her to see this kind of change. So, yeah, there's more that we have a video of people want to see, a video of testimonies as well, but people find it quite helpful, and that is very exciting for us. And also we are asking whoever comes into the course to give us feedback about the course, which is, it's all the time a work in process still. It takes time for something like that to become more and more adapted to the culture at hand.
Great. Thank you, Julissa. And it's lovely to get the feedback and to see the positive impact that it can have. We just have a couple more questions I'll get to because I'm just conscious of time as well. So we have a question here from Terry. Is it possible to do mindfulness practices with clients via interpreter, is it, or is it better that they listen to an audio?
So thanks for the question. In the beginning, we did it with an interpreter. It was very funny because we had a group with three interpreters in it, and each one came from different dialects of Arabic, and different people, it affected different people in different ways. In Arabic, and I guess there are other languages like that, I think Chinese is the same also, there's so many dialects, and sometimes you want your own dialect when you're dealing with your inner parts, you know? So interpreter can be good enough, just like a good enough mother. But in our audios, we really try to bring a dialect that is a dialect that the people from the Middle East will appreciate. Although even in the Middle East, there are many dialects, but we thought that we found something after some work that can speak their mother tongue. And I think that for all of us, I know that for me, I have a few languages that I speak, and each language is from a different era in my life. And I know that when I want to just deal with something, you know, in that era, I might need to talk to myself in the language that was my language then. And that's really something that I've seen it in my own personal life, and I now see also with the refugees. Bringing it to them in English can be sometimes affected with a lot of power games. And so I think that bringing it to them in Arabic, whether via an interpreter or via somebody that is an Arabic facilitator, would be the best. I'm putting here another thing for the MIA, Mindfulness in Arabic project, is that we really would like, that's another vision, to create the first mindfulness facilitator course, and specifically trauma-sensitive mindfulness facilitator course in Arabic. There hasn't been yet a facilitator course in Arabic. So this is also another step in the same direction.
Thank you so much, Judita. It's wonderful work what you're doing, and I'm really interested to learn more about it. And for anybody else, if you'd like some more information or you'd like to contact Judita, there are some links there that Fabienne has posted in the chat, and to Judita's website and the Mindfulness in Arabic as well. And I think we have the email address we'll pop in the chat there. So before I go to Judita for our final word, I'd just like to say, first of all, thank you so much. It's been really, really interesting, insightful presentation. Of course, before we finish, I just have a few things to highlight. So this recording of this presentation will be available for free for the next 48 hours. However, if you would like a copy of this and of the library of all the other speakers and presentations, please check out the portal where you can upgrade at a discount up until the end of the conference. And after that, it will be full price. It's a really generous thank you for everybody to make it possible. If you can afford to buy it, brilliant. We'd really appreciate it. If not, then you can just enjoy the recording. But if you do like to upgrade, if you would like to upgrade, you get the notes, you get the presentations. There's also audios available, so you can watch and digest and listen in your own time. Also, you can make a donation to a charity or to the conference, and those links will be available. If you'd like to join next, we have our coffee break coming up. So through the portal, just join the link that will be available in the chat as well. And you can continue the discussion, or feel free to join the Facebook page as well. And coming up next at 2 o'clock on this channel, on the Trauma and Social Change channel, we have queer embodiment, a panel discussion, so around gender and sexuality. So that will be really interesting. So thank you again, Judith, and I'm going to ask you to finish with the final sentence or word and your top tip for everybody on how to stay embodied.
Yeah, I think that the best thing is really to pause for time, from time to time, you know, just to pause and to see if you can sense back. Just asking yourself, you know, oh, how am I right now? And sometimes just putting your hand on your heart, you know, in your chest, or maybe one heart in your belly as well. Just asking, how is it? You know, and maybe where is it? And maybe, you know, just one long sigh. And then coming back to whatever you're dealing with.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much. Lovely, lovely advice there. Thank you, Jitisha. And thank you, everyone, for joining. Bye now.
Bye. Thanks a lot for being here.